The new drug therapies meant a big change in thinking for a Boston couple named Charlie and Barbara. Charlie has been HIV positive for a dozen years. Barbara is not. With medications, Charlie's health is relatively good, so for the first time, they can plan life more than just a few weeks out.
The horizon seemed to expand from tomorrow to next year, and not wondering whether I was going to be sick tomorrow, but I was figuring that I would probably be fine tomorrow and fine the day after as a result of these drugs.
That presented us an opportunity to be normal, to be like another couple.
Then to be thinking about the possibility of having children was very exciting.
I thought thoughts that I think other people do of, wow, what would this feel like growing inside me? Not to have a child, but to have our child.
But not so fast. If Barbara and Charlie have unprotected sex, odds are she won't get HIV, but there's certainly no guarantee. At any given time, a man may have more of the virus in his semen. At any given time, a woman may be more susceptible than usual to getting the infection, and few women get pregnant on the first try. Harvard University researcher Ann Kiesling wants to test a treatment for couples like Barbara and Charlie. Kiesling directed the laboratories at two Harvard-affiliated infertility clinics and also studies the basic science of sexually transmitted diseases. Kiesling considers a man with HIV infertile, even if there's otherwise nothing wrong with his sperm.
They can't conceive naturally without a real risk to the mother and the baby. That's never been a part of the infertility definition, but in their day-to-day world, they're infertile.
There may be thousands of American couples in which the man is HIV positive and the woman is not. Scientists call them serodiscordant couples. Among them are Harrison and Lily, who did not want to give their real names because their families do not know that Harrison has HIV. The couple was married 6 years ago. Harrison tested positive for HIV shortly after. Now they're enrolled in Ann Kiesling's experimental program.
We always thought we'd have children, and then we became an HIV positive discordant couple, and we thought, well, that's it, we can't have kids. We just can't have kids. And then we met Ann, and now
there are a lot
we
of
have
issues
possibilities.
They have to work through.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Is it morally reprehensible to have a baby if you're HIV positive?
Knowing that one parent can die, you know, a lot of people will say, well, anyone can lose a parent, but they don't know that ahead of time. You don't know that going in.
In addition, there's this question. If Lily contracts HIV, would the baby get it too? The chances are high. HIV-infected American women have a 1 in 4 danger of transmitting the disease to their children. Studies show that with anti-AIDS drugs, that risk drops to less than 10%, still a high figure. Researchers say a key to helping the female partner get pregnant without transmitting HIV is a laboratory technique called sperm washing. It's a relatively simple procedure used every day in conventional sperm banks and infertility clinics to boost the potency of sperm. With a centrifuge and other equipment, lab technicians separate sperm from the rest of the semen, removing extraneous cells and fluids. Once a sample is cleaned, only the most potent sperm cells are left, which are then injected into the woman's uterus by artificial insemination. Harvard researcher Deborah Anderson is an international authority on HIV transmission. Her lab conducted extensive research on sperm washing and found it highly effective against HIV.
I don't think you can give 100% guarantees, but what you can offer is numbers that say that by doing a sperm wash, the couple is much better off, much safer than trying to conceive on their own. We can decrease the virus load in semen 100,000-fold.
Anderson believes HIV generally lurks in white blood cells and other parts of the semen that get washed away, not in the sperm cells. In men who have a very advanced case of AIDS, the sperm may get infected. Ann Kiesling notes that the question of whether sperm cells can carry HIV is still scientifically controversial.
Other labs claim that those particles can actually adhere to the sperm. We haven't been able to detect that. That's not been our experience.
Sperm washing is not available to the American public, but it's been offered for a decade in Milan, Italy. Research from the Italian program has been published in leading international medical journals, a sign that the Milan Clinic does scientifically credible work. Dr. Augusto Semprini has artificially inseminated more than 470 women with washed sperm taken from their HIV-infected partners.
No woman who has been inseminated has ever developed infection with HIV. No child has ever got infected. So we think that the risk of infection by achieving pregnancy with our method is quite low.
Semprini says sperm washing for HIV is now offered in at least 4 other European medical centers. Despite the Italian success record, the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta does not condone the practice. CDC epidemiologist Scott Holmberg says other researchers need to replicate the Milan results before the technique should be widely used.
I think for my colleagues and myself, we have not yet seen this enough to feel real comfortable. At least initially, it will be a gamble on the part of the people using the technique.
Anne Kiesling freely acknowledges that her Boston infertility program is experimental, but she says too many HIV-infected couples are already betting that they can make babies the traditional, unprotected way.
I think about how many women have put themselves at risk of infection since I started thinking about this 10 years ago. It's thousands and thousands of women.
The Italian infertility specialist Augusto Semprini says American doctors have been slow to offer help to HIV-infected men because there's an unrealistic belief in the U.S. that a novel medical technique should carry zero risk.
While here we accept that the patient may decide to take a small risk against the benefit of parenthood.
The potential level of risk in the Boston program is simply unknown. To further reduce the danger to mother and child, the program will encourage couples to use in vitro fertilization, the process of creating a human embryo in a lab dish. That way, the woman never comes in contact with sperm or semen, just the embryo. It may be possible to test the embryo for HIV before it is transferred into the woman's body, but that test is still experimental. The Boston Infertility Program is set up as an independent, nonprofit foundation. Anne Kiesling teamed up with several Harvard infertility specialists to build a clinic in a distinctly unorthodox location. In the parking lot of a suburban Boston medical center, Kiesling unlocks the door to a conventional-looking recreational vehicle with a connected trailer.
Now this, the laboratory is totally self-contained. This is a generator.
Inside is nearly all the gear needed for in vitro fertilization. Why a clinic on wheels? Over the years, Kiesling has tried to convince a number of infertility programs to offer help for HIV-infected couples. She says some were interested, but then backed out for fear of unwanted publicity.
I decided that since I'd had so many hospitals decide it was a bad idea, that we wanted to be able to pick up and move if we needed to. So that was how we got into the concept of a mobile clinic.
The mobile lab has yet to produce its first human embryo, but it's already generating scientific controversy. Kiesling's Harvard colleague, Deborah Anderson, runs a completely separate HIV research program and is trying to get the CDC and other medical authorities to endorse sperm washing as a safe technique. Anderson fears that Kiesling is moving too quickly. Anderson recalls a 1990 Virginia case where a doctor tried to help a couple through sperm washing. The woman contracted HIV but did not get pregnant. The CDC investigated, but couldn't determine whether the woman got HIV because of the sperm washing procedure.
And it set the field back 10 years. And that could happen again without, you know, the proper protocols in place.
Kiesling has asked the research oversight committees of 3 separate Harvard teaching hospitals to approve her study, figuring that at least one of them will take on the politically delicate project. Indeed, one hospital has granted initial approval, but wants assurances that the research subjects fully recognize the risks involved. Some critics grumble that Kiesling is too much a maverick. People who know her say the 54-year-old biochemist is used to scientific conflict. Her supporters include retired California surgeon Leonard Simpson, a trustee of her Assisted Reproduction Foundation, who says Kiesling's independent nature impels her to serve the patients that other fertility specialists neglect.
I think she's probably dealt with controversy throughout her whole professional career. You know, being a maverick or one who thrives on standing up to controversy when she believes it's right is probably a driving force for her.
If the experiment succeeds, the Boston Infertility Program will serve a diverse group of patients. The clinic will probably be the only one in the nation to accept applications from women who wish to carry the child of a gay man with HIV disease. Trustee Leonard Simpson is an activist on gay and HIV issues and the father of a girl conceived before he contracted HIV. Simpson says gay men have as much right to assisted reproduction as heterosexuals, even if those men have HIV disease.
There is some prejudice, discrimination, ignorance around HIV disease. If a woman had breast cancer and assuming that the pregnancy would not hasten her clinical course, most of us would be very sympathetic if a woman wanted to conceive and have a child in the face of an illness.
The Assisted Reproduction Foundation has raised more than $350,000 to create the clinical program for people with HIV. A key goal is to offer infertility services at low cost. At many clinics, the bill for in vitro fertilization can easily top $10,000, and most patients pay out of their own pockets. It's not the money that Harrison and Lily brood about as they struggle with whether or not to have children. Their eyes rim with tears as they weigh the dangers to Lily and the child. Let me ask you, because we're talking about this risk, the awful question of how will you feel if the child is born with HIV?
I don't think we could handle that.
I don't think I could deal with being responsible for losing my own child.
If there's a measurable chance that that could happen, we just wouldn't have a child.
And there's a final issue to struggle with. Harrison is worried by some reports that the anti-AIDS drugs, which keep his illness under control, are turning out to be less effective over the long term than first hoped.
A few years ago, we thought, oh, maybe I won't die. Now that's no longer the case. I don't think, you know, children without two parents have as much opportunity in the world.
You can see it everywhere. There's so many social problems now. And it all seems to be coming back to nobody's home with the children. People are just doing what they want because it feels good. And we can't do that. We can't just go forward because we want a baby. You know, there's more to it than just your desire to have a child.
Harrison and Lily have much more thinking to do before they can decide to try for a child through the experimental Boston program. It's a gamble, but they have time. Ann Kiesling wants to start work with patients this summer, but it's still unclear whether she can raise enough money and get the final scientific approval she needs to proceed. This is Stephen Smith, Minnesota Public Radio.